Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4.5. Color, black and white, high-speed black and white, but you know what's even cooler? They have the Instax cameras and film. The Instax Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instax Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instax Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5 for the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out. www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet. Or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output, but they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high-resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain-free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And, of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. The camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks. The community for analog photography, www.apug.org, and of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org, the place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in their museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it. They have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. Today on the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program, we're going to have with us Aaron Muterick. Aaron is an avid photographer, doing a lot of great stuff. But today we're going to talk about, of course, his beautiful photography, what he's been up to, how he got into photography, but even more so on how Aaron's been playing around with taking Fuji Instant Pack Film, specifically the FP100C, and with a little bit of work you can do in your own kitchen, you can actually extract a negative. So think of this as being like the old Polaroid 665, but even better. This is color. You can wash the negative. You can do a little treatment to get coating off the back, a little bit of bleach. It's not hard stuff to do. Bang. You have a negative that you can scan into a hybrid workflow, do a color correction in levels to get rid of the purple mask, and you have some beautiful, beautiful one-off art. This is great stuff going on. Aaron, how you doing today?
I'm good.
Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you featured this week on the radio program. Aaron, we wanted to talk about your photography. You're doing lots of analog hybrid workflows. You're doing a lot of alternate process printing. You're doing a lot of great, cool things here with some Fuji Pack film. And we just want to chat today about Aaron and what you've been up to. So I guess to start with, Aaron, tell me how you got involved in photography.
I always had an interest in photography. My father worked as a professional videographer, always pushed me into video. It seemed to me like video was just so much more work to make 30 seconds of footage versus photography. I felt like I could artistically maybe achieve what I wanted without it taking over my whole entire life to produce something of value.
Yeah, video too, is just, I don't know, it doesn't have the look. Still photography is much more, I don't know how you put it, it's just got more, I think, meaning to it. at least the way it used to be. I mean, moving forward here with some of these new cameras and technologies, yes, you can get video to look like film.
You can do all kinds of things with the look. It's just an amount of time in post-processing to make film. I mean, you don't just record film. You have to edit it. You put it together. Versus you can take a picture, you can work it with a hybrid workflow or in the dark room, and then it kind of exists as this frozen capture in time. It's much more appealing to me.
It is, and if you wanted to do all that post, then might as well just shoot digital, and we wouldn't be talking.
Right.
Was it high school? When did you get a camera? When did you actually start shooting film, and you were actually starting to play with this, where it's like, I do like this better than video. I don't want to deal with this. I want to shoot photography.
I got a video camera when I graduated college and got a job, and then actually spent most of my time taking digital stills with it. Didn't really satisfy me. The quality was not so great. But that led me to say, okay, let's drop the video. Let's focus on still photography. I got a Canon digital SLR, played with that for a little while. And then, again, it wasn't really satisfying the artistic direction that I wanted to go. Then one day I was at a garage sale and I found this Polaroid color pack camera. I had no idea what it was at all. The guy at the sale explained it to me and it had an empty film pack. He showed me how it worked. And just coincidentally, I had seen a Polaroid pack film in the clearance rack at a camera store a few weeks earlier. Had no idea what it was then. Connected the two dots, ran over to the camera store, got it, shot a couple pictures, and was just totally, this is it. That moment, this is it.
Does the instant photography have more of an appeal to you than the traditional analog or digital? Because maybe your background, and we'll get into that.
What appeals to me about instant photography is the social element, the social aspect to it. Reading about street photographers and how they're surreptitious and they use a Leica because it's so quiet. I always felt like taking a picture of someone was, I mean, it's legal and you can do it on the street, but you're not really giving back. And just for my personality, the idea of being able to take a Polaroid of someone, take an instant snapshot, give it back to them, say, here, I just took this really nice picture of you. Even maybe if I didn't get to keep it, that was much more rewarding to me to know that I made something that maybe that person might put on their fridge. In a sense, if there's so many of us as photographers, it's hard to get your work seen. You take a picture of some cute kids at the park, you give it to the mom, and she's going to put it on the fridge, and it'll probably stay there for 20 years.
Yeah, you're right. It's a big deal. That's the problem anymore is because of this digital revolution and the way people are doing stuff, there's no photographs anymore. When you were shooting film exclusively, you drop stuff off at the photo mat or the drugstore, and you'd get back prints. You don't have a photograph until you have a print. Otherwise, it's meaningless. It's worthless.
I agree. Nowadays, people, they take all these pictures. They don't even take them off their memory card. Then they lose the camera, and they freak out. I just lost 5 years' worth of my family's photos. Well, because you never made any prints. You never turned it into a physical artifact, into something that really exists in the real world that can survive more than static electricity. It's sad, but that's the world that it's becoming. And in a sense, it makes the instant pictures that I give away to people maybe a little more special to them because they don't really have any paper photographs.
That's so true. I mean, you think about the people printing at home with digital images is on the decline.
Absolutely. People post them to Facebook and then they just forget about them. And they don't realize that maybe in 30 years, which is a really long amount of time to think ahead in your life, they might want to have those pictures. And who knows where Facebook is going to be in 30 years or who knows where those pictures are going to be. But if you have a bunch of prints in a box somewhere, barring natural disasters, it's probably going to turn up.
Yep. So you're shooting instant film. You got this PAT camera.
Mm-hmm.
Where did things progress from there? Because you're doing all kinds of different stuff now.
Things progressed into learning all about Polaroid as a corporation, learning about the Fuji films, learning about all the different films. I got a 4x5, I got a speed graphic, I was experimenting with the 4x5 film. 8x10 was a little rich for my blood, so I never caught that disease, which was probably better for my wallet. But experimenting with all that and learning how to do things, and then when I was talking about giving away pictures, using Polaroid 665 to be able to give away a print and keep the negative for myself, then we both win. The person thinks that they just got this picture from this crazy guy on the street who wouldn't take any money, and I get to come home with a picture that I'm very happy with. And then eventually, after thinking that a dark room was this really complicated thing, I bit the bullet and learned how to develop film and focus mostly on 120 with various toy cameras and different light leaks. I'm a creative person, but in a sense, I like to have the unexpected help me be more creative. And when things happen in the dark room, like mistakes, sometimes they ruin your picture, and sometimes they make your picture better than you ever would have been able to visualize it.
So true. And I think that's the big allure with the instant and the pack film. Instant photography is you don't know what's there to appeal it.
That's right. And with a completely digital process, you don't get anything that you didn't ask the computer to do. So it takes a lot away, I think, in terms of your ability to create images that take your photography up to the next level. You also have accidents that open your eyes to the way that you could maybe do that on purpose next time to bring an image up to the next level.
Let's talk about what you're doing currently with your photography. You're still experimenting with analog capture. Are you doing more pack film? What are you doing these days?
So it's been about almost 6 years since I started getting into photography and paying attention to it more versus being like a snap shooter. And I've settled on a couple of different techniques, one of which is using my pack film camera. I use a Polaroid 360, which is compact. It's built like a brick, works in all kinds of conditions. And like I said, taking pictures on the street, taking pictures of people, giving away the prints. And then very exciting new development that now I can take a color picture with Fuji pack film and get a real photo negative from it, which is fantastic. Or being able to scan the negative side of the Fuji 3000B film and get a picture that I get to keep. Because when 665 died, there was kind of a gap there. And then the other thing that I'm doing is I have a Russian Sputnik camera and doing a lot of medium format 3D transparencies. I've tried to find different cameras for different niches. Each one has to do something that the others can't do or won't do. The 360 has a social aspect to it too, where you open it up. Older people, they have very fond memories of the people who are a generation above them taking pictures of them using those cameras. So they want to talk to you on the street. It's much less adversarial than a paparazzi-type encounter with a SLR and a big, long lens. And if the younger generation looks at a camera like that, and they say, oh, that looks so cool, because retro is in, and then they want you to take their picture. So it turns that street photography from being a taking process into a giving process. And with the 3D camera, I've never seen anything like a medium format stereo transparency set. I mean, it just blew me away the first time. I knew that I had to learn more and figure out how to do it myself.
That is very cool. So have you found a good resource online where people can actually learn about what you're doing? I mean, is there a place for people talking about this Russian stereo camera?
There were a couple of isolated websites. There's an MF3D group on Yahoo where medium format 3D guys chat. There's a Chinese company that makes current cameras and current viewers and mounts and frames and things. It's nice that it's still alive in that sense. And then I put together a website of all of my photo stuff because I felt like I was pulling from lots of websites. And also sometimes websites would disappear because I'm maybe a little anal. I always download websites that I think are interesting. And so websites would disappear. Well, I would still have the information on my computer. So I decided to put that back up there. And I called the website Crypto Cinestographer, the secretive left-handed writer, because I am left-handed. So www.cryptocinestographer.com, that's crypto with a K. You can find out a lot there. I posted everything I know about Sputnik cameras up on that site and included a lot of templates and other things for people to modify them and kind of bring them up to modern spec.
And the source for all these cameras are, I guess, just eBay?
eBay, garage sales. The Sputnik is not something you're going to find at a garage sale, probably. I had to buy that. The speed graphic came from an old camera shop. The pack film cameras all came from garage sales. There was a Polaroid executive. I remember reading in one of the biographies on Edwin Land that garage sales were created as a place for Polaroid cameras to go.
Yeah, but it's amazing. You can get, I mean, even on eBay, if you don't want to go tripping out for garage sales, it is really fun to go look for stuff. I mean, I bought, I think, every plastic body camera they've made. And
I've got
ones that are brand new. Brand new color pack, 2s, 3s, 4s, all the stuff. For like $10 a piece, $12, $18.
That's right. And the other thing I learned moving forward was, being an engineer, I got caught up in all these details on the lenses and the sharpness. But that's not what makes a great picture. What makes the picture is the photographer and how they visualize and interpret the scene. And the fact is that to make a Polaroid that's 3 inches by 4 inches, you don't need NASA glass to make it happen or to make it pop. The glass lens Polaroid camera from the 50s or 60s is more than sufficient to create a phenomenal result. I scan my Polaroid prints, and I do 4x enlargements on them with a little digital magic, and holding them right up to your face, they look fantastic. So you can do things that maybe some engineering types would tell you, well, you can't do that because you don't have this really expensive equipment. But the fact is, you can go on eBay, $10. I mean, it's almost less than your first pack of film to get started with a fantastic piece of equipment.
This is so true. It's not really the cost of the camera anymore. It's just buying your analog acquisition material is expensive. Let's talk about this cool thing that you've been chatting up about on Flickr. Some guys have been playing with, and I think you've been pushing it pretty hard with trying with different things because of your background and what you're doing with your business and so forth. But there is a way, and people don't even know this really, there's a way to take Fuji pack film, at least with the FP100C and the FP100V, that you can actually do a little bit of, and you don't even need a darkroom, you need to do a little bit of chemical hacking, and you have a negative. It's as cool as 665, a little bit more work, but it's something that was hidden. This is like new. I'm sure somebody knew about this in Tokyo, and I've heard there's been some articles written about it in Japan, but you know something? For us sorry cats here in the States that just got a hold of this Fuji stuff and been playing with it, this is like a revelation.
It really is. I mean, talking about the social aspect of giving a picture, keeping the negative, and this has really opened up a door. I think in terms of workflow, working with the Fuji Color 100C is better than 665 because the negative is so much more resilient to the environment. Those 665 negatives were so delicate and so easily scratched and fragile. And to deal with them out in the field, and you had to keep them wet. And I'm walking around out in the street with a backpack that's sloshing with plastic bags of water in them. It was a mess. What you take the picture, you wait for the development time, you peel. If you're me, you gift the print. Now you have this negative, you dry it. I have a little pocket fan that helps in high humidity to dry it. The sooner you dry it, the better. But you kind of dry it in pseudo. Just let it get dry. I put it with my prints, put it aside till I come home.
So let's talk about that. So you dry it with a little pocket fan. Everybody's seen these little fans, especially if you're on the East Coast, and you could dry these things off. Now, what do you do with what's left? Do you throw part of it away? What do you keep, and what do you stick it in to preserve this until you get back to the kitchen?
I keep everything. So I give away the print. What you have is the negative with the plastic, with the goop, and the tab. And I take that, and I slide it into the front of my Polaroid 360 case, that black front that comes off. And I have a little squares of wax paper that I stapled into a binding. So I slip each one between two pieces of wax paper.
So you use wax paper and that works great.
It works great.
Okay,
cool. No problem.
So I guess you could use a moleskin or anything as long as you use wax paper between the layers. In this way, it doesn't hurt the negative, and if goop sticks to it, it's no big deal.
That's right. The only problem that you would have is if, in compressing them together, you squeeze the extra goop that's kind of sitting at the end back onto the picture or onto something else, and then that stuff still has chemical reactivity to it. And it's going to do something to your picture. Now, again, maybe that accident will be your moment of inspiration. But generally, we'll keep it off to the side. So now you take it home. It's dry. By the way, I tried a heat gun to dry them, a little portable butane heat gun. It did not work. So stick with the fan. I take a piece of glass. I use blue painter's tape, and I tape it down on all four sides, the edges.
With the emulsion side up?
Emulsion side is facing the glass. Black backing is up. And you want to tape it completely because the chemical you're going to use to remove this backing, to make it a transparency, will destroy the emulsion. And that's household bleach. That's what has been discovered. Use the household bleach. You dab a little on a paper towel, and you rub. It might seem like it's not doing anything at first, and then all of a sudden it'll start coming up. You can take it all off, or as I just recently discovered, my brother-in-law, Josh, I said, could you do this? I'm busy. Could you take the backing off? And he kind of did a really lazy job of it. I said, okay, well, I'll try it, and I scanned it, and it looked fantastic with speckled edges and smears and streaks and things that made it look like the negative had really washed up on a beach somewhere.
You know what would be really cool to do, actually, is if you took your blue tape, and if you used one of those craft scissors that had funky edge, cut your tape, and you could stylize your negative. You could do that in post, but nevertheless, it'd be cool.
You can do all kinds of things. Let's say, for example, that you're going to remove all the backings. You remove it all until the paper towel wipes clean, and you know that you've got it. Then you can flip it over. Usually what I want to do is wash it in cold water just to get the remaining chemical pod stuff off of the surface. And because this negative is so resilient, you don't really have to worry about damaging the image. So I wash it, and then at that point, all of the paper tab and the extra goop and stuff falls off because it gets wet.
When you're washing it, do you use your finger to help smear the goo off? I know the goo is pretty sticky stuff.
Yeah, I use my fingertips. I've done it with gloves. I've done it without. Whatever suits your preference is fine. But you need something. If you just let it sit, you'll swell the gelatin and eventually the image will fall apart. But it's not going to take the chemical off, just kind of a straight wash. And then I dry it. I don't use PhotoFlow or any kind of drying agent. I haven't seen a need. I haven't seen any spotting on that surface. And then it's an option of whether or not you want to fix the image to remove all of the silver that's still in there that kind of reduces the contrast. The silver also builds density. So depending on what you want to do with the negative, it could be a plus or a minus.
So when you strip this off, you have basically your clean negative, but there's a purple mask.
There's a purple mask that's there, and there's all the silver halide and metallic silver that was then converted into colored dyes. And if you remove the silver, you'll get a less dense negative, which is good for scanning. When I do alternative processes where I'm doing contact prints with UV light, I find that the silver adds to the density and helps to give a much better result.
So you don't have a problem with the purple mask then. And what are you using for your software to scan then?
I scan using Photoshop, and I have an Epson 4990, which I think is a great scanner that's really flexible for doing transparencies up to 8x10. I just scan in that. It brings it in. The purple mask is there. You invert it to get true color, which is way off. It has a very green tint because of the purple. At first, I started playing around and adjusting it manually, and then a trick that I realized was the Kodak Digital Rock plugin, which is a color correction plugin for scanning film. It does much more than just kind of correct LAB color or whatever color space it works in. It definitely has some smarts in there, and I really like the results that it gives. Then I'll take that and work between the two, like the original and what the Kodak plugin gives, and either adjust the opacity so that maybe I only get 70% Kodak plugin and 30% original, or then I'll add another curve layer and play with it myself there until I get either, depends, are you looking for true color or are you looking for some kind of artistic rendition?
Yeah, if you were really worried about true color, you would have fixed it and removed the color mask, and basically you have a color neg, almost like a C41 looking neg with no mask.
That's exactly what it looks like. And you can, using color correction in the computer, make it a true color image that looks, I would say, as good as the print.
Now, do you think when you get this to the point to where you're making these prints or making the scans from it, that you're going to get a reproduced quality that's as good as the print? Or do you think it even opens up more shadow detail and you actually have a better looking image from the negative after you processed it?
Taking an instant print is like taking a chrome. What you see is what you get. There's very little leeway in, say, scanning a print and then opening up shadows or trying to replace areas that are blown out. But with the negative, you really do have a couple stops on either side of information that's in there. And by using curves, you can choose how you want your picture to look. So it offers a lot more flexibility, just like a traditional negative would in the darkroom.
Wow, this is great stuff. This is very cool.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I placed a nice order for some FP100C after I figured this out.
Well, I mean, look at the possibilities. I mean, I played with it. I was just shooting some stuff actually last night just with a Contax 645, so I have a smaller, of course, image area. And you definitely could tell the purple mask when you have a smaller image on the piece of 3.25 by 4.25. But I did this with Tilex. I put it on a plate and didn't even tape it. Just squirted Tilex in the bags, rubbed it with a paper towel like I was just scrubbing whatever. Hosed it off in the sink. I used my finger to wash off the chemical. I mean, I got a couple water spots, and yeah, I should have used PhotoFlow, but whatever. No way. This is crazy.
Polaroid made a film with a color transparency result, but that was discontinued long ago. I mean, this basically revives it. It's not a positive, it's a negative, but with a hybrid process, this is not a big deal. And you can just invert it. And also, based on my experimentation, there's more resolution in that negative, not only in terms of exposure densities, but in terms of detail. So you could probably get a 5 or a 6X enlargement, and it would really look fantastic printed if you sent it out to a light jet printer or something like that.
Well, sure. I mean, think about this, okay? So we have a 3.25 by 4.25, and we have a very close to that image size on the neg. So where can you shoot large format color and get negatives for a $5 camera and $10 in film?
And do it handheld, unobtrusively, without a giant speed graphic.
Well, sure. And then hack it in the kitchen in 5 minutes. How long do you fix it for? Let's talk about the fix state. So let's say if you do want to remove the purple mask and you don't want to screw around in Photoshop that much. I mean, if you remove the purple mask, you can actually put this in a traditional or larger and just go at it. Let's talk about your fixing. What are you using for a fixer?
I use Kodak Rapid Fixer because that's just what I have around.
Right. Regular black and white Rapid Fixer. No special color blicks or anything.
If I use Fresh Fixer, 5 minutes, agitate once a minute.
You just do it in a tray.
Yep.
And that's it.
Done and done. Yep.
Now, you do it for how long?
5 minutes.
5 minutes and agitate it every minute or so.
Yep, just to shake it up, get the chemicals moving around.
And that dissolves the extra silver, the color mask goes away, and now you have this beautiful clean negative.
That's right. I mean, it still is going to look purple because generally if it has something that has greens in it or whatever, they're going to look purple on the negative. But yeah, that tint that you noticed when you took the bleach off is dramatically reduced.
But you still have a tint there. There's still a little bit of the
emulsion. There's still a little bit of a tint. I mean, I haven't tried to put it in an enlarger and make a black and white print or a color print. I know some people have tried that, and I think that they were able to get results. But really, this suits itself to a hybrid process because you really want the ability to do color correction. Obviously, Fuji never meant for this to be able to happen.
No, but why not? I mean, hey, it just makes the product that much more cool. This is why it's so very cool that this is a new discovery. Fuji did not intend this. They don't sell it as, hey, hack our negative apart and you can make some cool stuff.
That's right. And I think it's very exciting because we are living in an era where the whole world is moving in a direction that's not the direction we're moving in. And so how much new stuff do you expect to come out? I mean, when Kodak introduced Ektar 100, people were like, this is fantastic, a new film, we can play, we can experiment. This is the same kind of thing. It's something totally new that nobody ever thought was possible, and you can use existing, easily available stuff to do it.
No, I think this is very cool. So what do you see with people experimenting with this, different chemicals? Have you seen anything that looks promising? Of course, you do the FP100B, the black and white, 100 ISL. Right. You get a really thin negative. It's very touchy.
It's very touchy. It also has a lot of solarization. There's some kind of red dye in there that builds up in these solarized areas. It could be an interesting look, but it's not going to give you something that gives like a photographic reproduction that you can work from. I see it as a specialty thing. If you take the backing off of the 3000B, the high-speed film, which I love because it just is so sensitive that using one of those pack film cameras, you have a lot of flexibility in natural light. That film has a reflective backing, is what adds a stop or two of speed to the emulsion. So when you take that back off, what you're left with is a translucent white sheet with the negative on one side. I've tried using it with alternative processes, UV exposure. You can get something, but because the light has to travel through the sheet, it's a little diffuse. It's kind of like doing a cyanotype where you print black and white on a piece of white paper and then put the paper on top.
Right. And so you couldn't even get a decent scan off the negative of the 3000B after you do the hack.
After the hack, no, you can't scan it as a transparency. But what you can do is just allow that 3000B to dry, just like you allow the 100C to dry. It's a little more delicate. If raindrops fall on it, they will destroy the image in that area. But basically, allow it to dry and then leave it dry. I don't even wash it afterwards, and then I scan it as a reflective, and then I invert it, and I have an image.
And you get pretty good quality from that, too.
I get fantastic quality, and again, the shadows and the highlights, there's more in there than you got in the print, and you also have more resolution in that negative for more enlargement than you would have by scanning the print.
Yeah, no, I think this is great. It just shows the flexibility of the material and how cool this is.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Now, I guess the next hack is to try to take Instax film and cut it open and see what happens.
Right, and see what's in there. And the next possible project comes up with, I mean, who knows? They recognize their market are artists and professional and amateur enthusiasts who would be interested in films that aren't necessarily perfect reproductions of the world. I mean, that's what the engineers used to work for at Kodak and Fuji, working towards perfection. Whereas, like the chocolate film that they rolled out, that's by no means an accurate reproduction, but artistically, it's beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
It has this crackleture and the artistic time zero. Something was wrong with the gelatin in that, and you get this crackleture, it ends up looking like a fresco. And I think they have a film line that's running and control over doing small batches. They might be able to come up with some really fun stuff for us to play with.
No, I think so, and I think now we're so lucky that Fuji has this pack film available. A lot of places now, of course, stock it. If not, you can just go online and order it. It's very inexpensive compared to the extortion that's going on with any old Polaroid product.
Well, there's that, and I've basically switched over to being a Fuji shop with my transparencies for my Sputnik and for my Instant. They really took it up. I mean, distribution-wise, when Polaroid phased out, I was really glad to see that it started coming in. It was more available. It wasn't like this gray market import that it had been for years and years.
Right, because you can get the stuff anywhere now, pretty much. The Instax Mini now is going to be in the country here any day. So instead of using your old Polaroid Mio or one of the cool Fuji Instax Mini cameras, you'll be able to buy the stuff now at your local store, B&H, wherever.
Yeah, the Mini is great. I do have a Mio that I found somewhere, and I have a bunch of Instax film that I had imported a while ago. And I notice when I take the pictures, they're small, and they're definitely limits your composition. But people keep them in their wallets, their credit card size. So again, it's like, why are you taking the pictures? Are you taking them for you? Are you taking them to put them in a drawer somewhere? Are you taking them for other people to carry around and enjoy? Even total strangers, it gets it out there.
No, and I think there is something, like you said, about giving people images and sharing the stuff. I mean, I remember once going to a county fair and walking around with my Polaroid 600SC. I was using FP3000B, and it was at night. I was taking pictures of carnies and giving them a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it was like you gave them the best present ever, and it
and
made people
can,
so happy.
You can keep that negative for yourself now, and you can turn it into something.
Exactly. That's why this is so cool, and I think there's not things you run across very often that's a revolution that's new. They've been doing film for 100 years or plus. Yes, we got the new Ektar is great, and Fuji has their Natura 1600 from Japan that can't
cool
get,
stuff.
And that stuff rocks. There's little cool things, but you know, it's really all the same. But when you find out something that you've been using, and it's like a hidden gem that there's a secret little lock, and you can open it up, and guess what? You got something cool? That's why this is very neat, because it's a free gift. The Fuji engineers kicked us down a freebie.
Absolutely did. And I went through my files. I had kept not all of my negatives, but some. Just because I took pictures around the house, so the negatives just didn't get thrown out. They had dried, and I was like, oh, well, they're dry. I'll throw them in my box of stuff. Well, now I could go back in that box. I can remove the backing, and you never know.
You never do know. So I think that's cool, and I think more people will experiment with different fixtures and different things moving forward. It's quite interesting. Now we just need to get a Fuji engineer on the horn, and then we can find out even more things you can probably do.
Well, someone who really knows the chemistry of what's going on not only will be able to offer better solutions to the problem that we're solving now, but maybe doing limited runs, just like the other guys, limited runs of films that are more geared towards what the current market is looking to do. An artistic market, never going to burn as much film as commercial photographers, but eager and willing and excited to be customers.
Sure.
Anything can happen.
It is. What does Aaron look forward to moving forward with your photography to do stuff you haven't done? Are you concentrating more on the 3D stuff? Have you got one of these cameras from China? I've saw it. It's like a three-lens. Interesting-looking piece of equipment. Nothing you can buy here in the States, and you can order stuff, I guess, through them direct. I mean, it's a really weird thing they have going.
There's a guy here in the U.S. who's a distributor, Dr. T3D.
Yeah?
He reps for them, and he will sell the cameras. I don't have one. The Sputniks are like $150 on eBay, and I love hacking and messing with things. And so the nights spent kind of bringing it up to spec and fixing the light leaks and adjusting the lenses was worth it to me to not spend $1,700 on one of those 3D World cameras. And I think you get equivalent results. I've traded slides with people, and I haven't seen any technical difference in sharpness or edge-to-edge brightness, things like that.
Now, have you tried to make ViewMaster things from your 3D images? I mean, I know there's some people that are doing that now, and they'll put together ViewMaster reels. I don't know what you were doing with your stereo photography here.
One of the things that didn't impress me when I came across an old batch of 3D slides that were on 35mm was it's like looking at a 3D image through a tiny window that's 20 feet in front of you. That's how they appear. They're 3D, but they're on the other side of this window. And sometimes you could do a trick with how you lay out the chips on the slide so that the image is coming through the window. It's a window violation, but with the trick with the snake explodes out of the can and it comes out of the screen, the 3D movie. Medium format, because of the optics and just because of the way it works, is a much more immersive view. So instead of feeling like you're looking at a window far away, if you turn your eyes, you can look all around inside this picture. It's very different than looking at a picture on a wall because you have to look around and kind of explore in it, and it's hard to find the edges of that window. There's no big black box that's surrounding it. Whereas ViewMaster, because it's a smaller chip, just makes that window kind of look even further away.
Right.
So I've kind of stuck with the medium format, and the only downside is that there's really no point in scanning them and putting them on the web because you just don't get the dynamic range that you get with a backlit transparency.
Nope.
That makes them look so like these people are frozen in time right in front of me. The other downside is it's really hard these days to make duplicates because all of these slide duplicating films are being discontinued and the specialist shops that duplicate slides are going out of business. So really what you have are one-of-a-kind artifacts.
You're, of course, using the Sputnik 3D camera, so you have a lens separation of, what, maybe 4 inches or something?
I think it's 62 millimeters, 62, okay. 62 and a half, something like that.
Have you tried doing independent cameras on a big bar where you have maybe a 3-foot separation?
I have never tried it. That works best with landscape type things where you want to really exaggerate the 3D effect. If you're looking at a mountain far away, when you look at it in real life, you don't really get a 3D effect. But you imagine that you do because you're in the scene. Where you create with the bar, you extend the interocular distance on the picture. It dramatizes that. I find I focus mostly on pictures of people. I think it's easy to take pictures without people in them because nobody complains and nobody says, why are you taking a picture of me? So I find that to be a challenge and I try and focus on that.
What do you like viewer-wise? What's your best viewer you're liking? Are you processing your own E6? You sending the stuff out?
No, I do process my own E6. That was another part of it. I called the local lab and said, how much for a roll of 120 E6, which is in 3D, 6 pictures, because there's a left eye and a right eye for
right.
each. And they wanted $15. And it just wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So then I dove into how do you develop your own E6, and there's two camps. One is, this is so hard, you can't do it, and the other is, it's a piece of cake. And the fact is, it's a piece of cake. You follow the instructions. I took a steel film can, and I built a neoprene koozie that wraps around it to insulate it so that the temperature drop is slowed down considerably so that it'll maintain a certain average temperature over the 6.5 minutes that you need for the first developer. And then the rest of it is just pouring chemicals and putting it on the rollers and letting it sit for 5 minutes and pouring them out and pouring the next ones in, and then you're done and you get a perfect result.
So you're using a regular roller or using a Jobo?
No, I'm using a regular roller.
Wow, how cool.
I just have one Tupperware container that keeps all the chemicals at the right temperature with an aquarium heater that I hack. Aquarium heaters don't usually go up to 100 degrees because that'll cook the fish. but you can hack it. And I wrote about that on Crypto Cinestographer. And then I just put it on a regular roller, and it just rolls. That costs about $1.50 a roll. I do four rolls, given the certain amount of minimum chemistry that Codex is to use. So $1.50 from $15 is a big difference. Makes it much more affordable, especially when you're only getting six pictures for that. And then you try the film, you cut it. I have a light table that I found in the trash somewhere, so I use that to backlight them. I have these plastic mounts that are made by that 3D World company in China that I got from Dr. T. You just put the chips in them, and kind of by sight, you line them up. You pick a point that's closest to the front of the scene in three dimensions, and you want to line them up just in the right way. And then you clip them closed. That 3D World company also makes a medium format viewer. They make two, and both of them are bargain basement prices for the optics that are in them. The one that you have to hold up to the light to see, they're best used outside, is $35. You slide your slide in, and you just look. And then they make a deluxe one that has LED backlighting and focus and interocular adjustments, and I think that one's maybe $70. But still, given what you're getting, if you had to buy that as an antique, something that's not made anymore, you'd probably pay hundreds of dollars for it.
Sure.
And you show it to people, and the first thing that happens when you put that slide in and you tell them to go outside and look up at the sun, and you see they start looking around, like their head turns, because the scene is so real to them, and it's so in their face, that they start turning their head to kind of see what's off to the side. And then after a second or two, they realize that turning their head doesn't work, and it's amusing. But it really blows people away. If you can have an opportunity to look at one, I would make the effort to take it, because they're amazing to look at.
Or like you said, maybe you spend a few $100 and get into 3D, and why not?
That's right. And if you do the processing yourself, and you want to be able to learn how to fix the camera yourself, one, you'll learn a bunch of stuff, which is always fun. And two, then you're in control of all of the different aspects of it.
Yeah, why not? This is pretty cool stuff. So let's give out this website address so people can find out and look at your great work, see what you're up to. Check out this stereo imaging and all the cool stuff that you're doing, Aaron.
Okay, it's CryptoCinestographer, www.krypto-cinestographer.com. That was really long. Whoa, I almost messed that one up. But so, CryptoCinestographer.com, and I'll also put a link to my Flickr stream on there. So if people want to see some of those scanned Fujis that I put up and some other stuff that I'm working on, you are welcome to take a look.
Yeah, no, this is beautiful photography doing. Just a delight to chat with you today to talk about this cool stuff and to see people that are still experimenting with analog photography and doing this great stuff. And like you said, not worried about the latest new digital sensor and the super glass with 6 million lines of resolution. And you know, you can go out and you can be basically on no budget. You can get a camera for $5, you can buy some film, and you can make some cool art that would rival anybody.
You can do it. I mean, people used to make cave paintings with charcoal and iron oxide. So you can do it with all these tools that are available. And take advantage of the fact that people are selling all their analog gear cheap and turn it into something for yourself.
There you go. That's great stuff. Aaron, we look forward to chatting again. Let's touch base to see how things are going with some of your other projects. And I do appreciate you joining us today on Inside Analog Photo. And just great to see your beautiful photography and all this cool stuff you're doing, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go. Aaron Muterick. Great photographer. Very cool to have him share this process. Originally, this was brought to the attention of everybody by Paco Roca out of Spain. Aaron's been playing with this stuff, and it was great that he came on the program today to share his knowledge of this process and how we can all advance this. This is like a new discovery in analog photography. This has been here, but no one knew about it. This is pretty fun stuff. You definitely want to try it. If you're shooting pack film, you need some Fuji FP100C. You can do this process yourself. Of course, you can find the stuff over at the Polaroid group on Flickr. There's a lot of great things going on, but this is cool fun. This is a new way to create very cool art using the materials that's left over from the Fuji instant film image. And then you can bring this into a hybrid workflow that people really need to embrace if they want to see analog photography prosper. And this is just great stuff that Aaron's been doing. The Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.